Always said third fiddle is better than no fiddle at all. So I'm happy to be here, although I realize that two very, very great and powerful men are unable to be here. I want to deal with a scripture tonight that is very familiar to us. A friend, Charles Hodge, has a saying that he uses quite often. He says that familiar scripture should be read more carefully, and unfamiliar scripture should be read. And so I'd like for us to read together the account of the woman and the mites. Verse 41 of Mark 12, now Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury, and many who were rich put in much. Then one poor widow came and threw in two mites, which makes a quadrant. That's the New King James translation. So he called his disciples to himself and said to them, assuredly, I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty put in all that she had, her whole livelihood. It's a mistake many times of taking a verse away from its context. And it's only when I restudied this is much very important to gain a greater meaning. Who are the people? Who are those who are putting in the great amount? And if you look at the paragraph above, Jesus tells us who some of these were. In verse 38, he said, beware of the scribes who desire to go around in long robes and love greetings in the marketplace, the best seats in the synagogues, and the best places at feasts, who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. These will receive a greater condemnation. You see, this is not just a lesson about giving small amounts or poor widows. This is actually a lesson about character. And it's actually a contrast between two kinds of character. And I don't guess most of us realize or know of a time in which there's a greater need for character than there is right now. We're in tough times. We're in difficult times. I don't know what it means, but the last time I was here was on September 11th. And since then, there are a very great many of scared people. There are people who are afraid to fly. There are people that are afraid to open their mail. And this compounds the fear that was already there. There are many people, as the result, have become terribly depressed. And the solution to living in tough times, the key to surviving the perils of our time, is having the right kind of character. Character is what you are. Reputation is what people think you are. And there is no character that is able to successfully stand in a difficult world that is not based upon our relationship with Jesus Christ. And so I'd like for us to notice some of the things that we have in this text today that tells us about the character that we find. You know, you can go to heaven without a lot of things. You can go without great wealth, or you can go without great ability. You can go without good health. You can go without many friends. But there's no way that anyone will ever go to heaven without Jesus Christ. And people may judge you various ways. They may look at you and say, he's a good husband. She's a good wife. He's a good neighbor. He's a good citizen. When the Lord looks at us, he only asks one question. Has he been born again? And is he faithful? And it's only when we find this relationship that we can find the kind of character that Jesus here commended. Jesus, first of all, shows the wrong kind of character. We see here men who were seeking prominence and praise. He said they went around in long robes. That's interesting, because in those days, people with long robes were people that didn't have to work for a living. Among those were government officials and religious leaders. They wanted to be identified by the work they did. They wanted the titles. They wanted to be called rabbi, of course, which means teacher. But they want to be recognized as teacher. And yet Jesus has warned against this. 23rd chapter of Matthew, verse 8 and 9. Be not many of you called rabbi, because we're all brothers. And call no man father upon the earth, because one is your father who is in heaven. We can see also that they were people who... you'll have to bear with me. My notes are in one size and my glasses are in another. If I wear my glasses, I can't see you. If I don't wear my glasses, I can't see my notes. So you take your choice. Which one would be the better? There were people that had no mercy. It says that they devoured widows' houses. I don't know exactly what it meant to devour widows' houses. That is, these scribes and these Pharisees, the scribes and the rabbis. For one thing, a rabbi in Jesus' day received no pay from the synagogue. Most of them worked for a living, like the Apostle Paul, who made tents. But there were some who lived on donations, who let people give them money. There were some that probably in their relationship with some of the widows gave them financial advice and perhaps exploited the source of the wealth of the widows into their own purses. And Jesus talked about people like this. They were people who played at religion. He talked about those who prayed long prayers. Now, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount talked about these. You remember how he talked about those who made long prayers to be seen of men. You know, there were two market days in Jesus' day, Tuesday and Friday. And somebody pointed out that the days that the rabbis would go out would be Tuesday and Friday. And they had the set days of prayer, like Peter and John at the temple, set hours of prayer, rather. And it's told that some of these rabbis, some of these scribes, when the time for prayer came, they would stop wherever they were in the middle of the sidewalk, in the middle of the street, in the marketplace, and they'd pray long prayers. And probably somebody would come by and say, "My, isn't he a spiritual person?" And Jesus said that you're not heard because of your long, great much speaking. Because Jesus said they have their reward. That's a business term, which means the very same as paid in full. A person who prayed a long prayer to receive the praise of men got the praise of men. But receiving the praise of men, he is paid in full. He got no praise from God. You know, that's the danger sometimes, I guess, we face. I don't want to judge people by the length of their prayers because I don't know. I'm sure all of you have heard the story about the man who slipped into church one Sunday late, and a man was leading the prayer, and it was the custom in those days. He got down on his knees. One knee wore out, he went to the other one. That one wore out, he went back to the other one. And finally he asked a man, whispered to a man next to him, he said, "How much longer is he going to pray?" And the man asked him back, said, he said, "Mention the Jews yet?" He said, "Yes, about 5 minutes ago." He said, "When he comes to the Jews, he's half through." But let's be sure that in our prayers that we don't pray just to be seen of men. You know, it's a great danger of men who lead the prayer because they've got to speak not only to God, they've got to speak to people also. And that's the temptation, is rather than speaking to God. They were also those who, as we said, they sought this prominence. Let me pull aside now and make some practical applications. It's a warning to us to preach. I'm thankful. I came all this way for one reason, and that is because I knew preachers would be here, and I like preachers. You know, there's a bond we have that others don't have. And I always love to be with preachers, and I also love to preach to preachers because they hear so little of it. And they need it about as bad as anybody I know. But let's look at some things here. Do we desire prominence? There's a difference in prominence and greatness. Jesus never condemned being great. He condemned being prominent. The difference is how a person becomes great. He said, "The greatest among you is the one who is the servant of all." He's never condemned people. He encouraged people to be great. It comes from service. He mentioned in Luke 22, he said, the Gentiles lord it over you. But he said, it shall not be so among you. For he that will be the greatest among you is the servant of all. There's only one position qualified for which a person can be qualified to lead, whether he's preacher, elder, or whatever. The only position from which they can lead is from their knees. They lead as servants. And they serve as an example. And they lead because, and their people follow them because they see them as willing to lead and willing to serve. We don't use titles. We don't have reverend. We don't use reverend. I know Psalms 111:9, but Jesus in Matthew 23 showed us why we should not use the term and why we should not wear any particular pulpit robes or anything different. We're all brothers. Now let's be careful not to misuse the term brother. Because where I come from, we have about 90 churches in our county. Most of them do not have a quote ordained unquote preacher. And so whenever they're listing the obituaries in the paper, they put brother so-and-so. What they're doing, they're substituting brother for reverend, what it is, or some other title of distinction. I heard Brother Guy Wood say one time about, he said he was at a church where they said, Dr. So-and-so is going to preach today, and Brother So and Brother So-and-so is going to lead the prayer, and Bill Jones will lead the singing. Preacher does not have the title of brother. We're all brothers. And of course, that's a generic term, which means we're brothers and sisters also. We don't have any special prominence. I baptized a man Thursday morning. He responded Wednesday night, the last night of our meeting. He had not been coming to church, raised in the church. He's an elderly man. And so Sunday morning, my wife and I were driving late, and we pulled into the parking lot, and that brother got my parking place. My first thought was, doesn't he know that's my place? And then I realized I don't have a reserved place. And you don't have a reserved place. Now, you may be like me. You got a place where nobody else will park. I've always had that because they know it's mine. But it doesn't belong to me, does it? We're all brothers. I think we also need to see the danger of greed. There are two kinds of people, somebody said. There are people in the world who love things and use people. And there are those who love people and use things. Which one are you? Such a beautiful picture as you come to the ninth chapter of the book of Acts, where Peter comes to this little town, and they send for him and says, Dorcas is dead. The word Dorcas means gazelle, which might tell us something about her, doesn't it? And as he comes to this house, you know, I don't know why they sent for Peter. I don't think they called Peter to preach the funeral. I believe they had some inkling or some germ of faith that perhaps he could do something. And so he comes. As he comes to the house, there are widows outside the door, and they're crying. And you can almost graphically in the Greek, it says like they would be saying, look, Peter, look, this is a coat that Dorcas sold for me. Oh, what a beautiful epitaph. And of course, you know, I've always thought about how when Peter went up in the room and he prayed for her and said, Sabitha, arise, that what she must have thought. Who is this man? But what are we known for? I've often thought such a great contrast in Dorcas and in Ananias and Sapphira. Great contrast between Balaam, who Jude says loved the hire of unrighteousness. We live in a material world, and that's a great danger. And we need to learn that from these people, this character here. I believe we need to re-examine the way we help the poor. Most churches have a benevolent program. But I really believe that this is an area in which we can influence people that we, most churches, most of us neglect. I heard Brother Ira Norris say one time that the church in Jerusalem had a benevolent program so big that it took six men working full time to carry it out. And he says most churches carry out their benevolent program in a man writing a check every month of children's home. In my opinion, benevolence, as well as helping people medically and other ways, is done in the place of the miracles. It has the same effect as miracles in that it gives credibility to what we do. It shows that we are what we claim to be. And I think we need to look and we need to act in a benevolent way rather than react to benevolence. Most of us react. Somebody comes in. We had a man come in just a couple of Sunday mornings ago. And he said, I need a ride up to Albany, about 20 miles. And I said, nobody's going to Albany right now. You sit down, and when church is over, somebody will take you up there. So he got at least one sermon out of his ride. Turned out he had been there 3 years before, the very same tale. And most of us have that. But I think we need to look for a chance to act in a benevolent way rather than just to react in a benevolent way. But now let's look at the widow. What does it say about her? She's a woman who rose above circumstances. She is poor. The Greek word there is a word that means she has no resources at all. She had none of those initials. S-S-I-R-A, 401-K. She didn't have any of those things. She didn't have a benevolent program. She didn't have a welfare program from the city or the state or the county. A widow's hope in that day was in her relatives. If she had no, when her husband died, she was totally dependent on her son. And that's why perhaps when Jesus saw this funeral procession come out of Nain, and it's a poor widow leading the casket of her only son, is why he felt so strongly about helping her. She had no son. If she had no children, if she had no grandchildren, if she had no nieces and nephews, she had practically nothing. It's a difficult time to be a widow in those days. As I said, she had no resources. When she went by and dropped in those two copper coins, she put in all she had. She hadn't dug a hole in her house, in the floor of her house, and hid several gold coins. She didn't have those. She didn't have the 10 coins like the woman did that swept the house. She had nothing at all. The Greek word here meant that she was in abject poverty. And there was no hope of her ever getting much better. She rose above the circumstances. And character does that. Sometimes we have people, you know, and this is in the last month, people said, why? Why? You know, there's some people who question God and say, how could God do this? Well, God didn't do it. God allowed it. Well, how could God allow it? And I said several times, I don't know why. I only know why I believe in God, who knows why. And I believe he does. God may send us trials to test us. God may send us trials to chastise us and to make us better. But never do we have the right to ask the question, why? I think we ought to go back to elaborate on something I said a moment ago. God loves the widows. Widows hold a special place for God. Psalm 68 5, it says God is the father of the fatherless and the husband of widows. And James said that pure religion, undefiled before God and the Father, is this, is to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. And here was the Lord who took care of her. What can we say about her? I think we have to look at her character. She's like the widow that Paul wrote about in 1 Timothy 5, who had set her trust, who had her hope set on God. She's really a widow. She trusts in God, continues in supplications night and day. I've often wondered, what happened to the widow the next day? But after reading this verse, I just have to say the Lord provided. It's what he did for her because of who she was and not so much because of what she gave. And then I think we also need to say that she's an example of wholehearted devotion. This is seen in her gift. She gave two copper coins. Maybe you have the King James Version, which says two mites, which make a farthing, which tells us nothing at all about what it was worth, does it? Last time I looked, we didn't use mites and farthing in our coin system. We don't down in Tennessee. Y'all might up here. I don't know. Several ways to define it. I've seen just a while ago, read one, said it's about 60 cents in our money. You got to allow for inflation. So if you want to calculate the worth of money in biblical times, go back to the parable of Matthew 18 where Jesus hired the laborers for the vineyard. And a laboring man received one denarii, which was the Roman coin. That was a day's labor. Well, you figure, of course, he worked 12 hours. Most people today work only 8. But you figure, say, $5, which is close to the minimum wage, maybe less. I don't remember what it is now. So actually, then, a denarii was worth $40 in our money. A lepton, as it is here, is 1/32 of a denarius, which the way I figure is just about $1.30 or $1.40. That's a lot less than not more than two pennies, isn't it? Well, what will $1.25, $1.30 buy today? Except a phone call, of course. You know, you pay $1 for a bottle of water and don't think anything about it, do you? That's what much this woman gave. That's all she had, enough to buy a bottle of water. And she's willing to give it away. She didn't spare. You know, I've often thought about the excuses this woman could have made. She could have said, but it's all I've got. I don't know what I'll do about tomorrow. She could have said, you know, it's mine. I've worked for it. I don't know how she earned it. There were no desk jobs in those days. There were no secretaries. She might have gone out and gathered a little bit of wood and sold it. I don't know. But she did not make any of the usual excuses. Because you see, what she gave was a symbol of what she was. In giving all that she had, she was showing she was giving everything she was to the Lord. And that's something I'll return to in just a moment. And again, we've come to some lessons. Number one, Christ watches the collection. The Greek word there means he very carefully watches the collection. He does not miss anything. Oh, I know we try sometimes, don't we? I can remember years ago when I wasn't nearly as prosperous as I am now, maybe when I was still in school, I discovered something. Maybe you've discovered the same thing. There is no way you can fold a $1 bill that a one doesn't show. If you don't believe me, try it after I get through, please. I've known of people back years ago that would just kind of take the collection plate and put their hand over it and open it, you know. I can remember many years ago when people would be putting coins in the collection plate, that's all they had, that a brother perfected how he could thump the bottom of it with his finger. And it sounded like he'd drop a half a dollar in, you see. It doesn't matter, brethren. Christ watches the collection. He not only sees how much people give, he sees the heart of the people who gives. And he approves and he disapproves. You know, something I'd never realized just a few moments ago, doing one final bit of review. This woman probably did not know that Jesus was watching. This woman did not hear the words of commendation of Jesus. But that didn't make any difference. You remember what I said earlier about character and about greatness? There's a difference in character and reputation. There's a difference in greatness and prominence. This woman was great. This woman had character. And it did not matter that she ever heard what Jesus said. It wouldn't have affected what she was. And so oftentimes we are the opposite, aren't we? I heard once a gospel advocate gave a dinner that they used to do it many times, the lectureships. They said one preacher walked in as they were getting seated, and he asked the person in charge, he said, "Where's my place at the head table?" And they told him, they said, there's no place for you at the head table. He said, "Well, from now on, I will buy my literature from 20th Century Christian," and walked out. Jesus said, when you go to a feast, take the lowest seat. Even though you're the speaker, don't sit down at the speaker's table. And people will come and say, "Well, what are you sitting here for? You're supposed to be up here at the head table." And Jesus said, it's so much better to do that than for somebody to come to you and tap you on the shoulder and said, "I'm sorry, you're not supposed to be sitting right here." We need to see that Christ watches what we do. And he watches our character above everything else. We need to see that our gifts not only include what we have, our gifts include what we are. I'm going to ask you to do something, if you would. I don't do this too much, but I'd like for each one of you to take out some money. Okay? I don't care how much it is, preferably a bill, but, you know, whatever you want to. But I want you to take it. I'd like you to look at it just a moment. So shall we have a verse of a song while we're waiting for everybody to come up with their bill? I've got a 20 right here. Fortunate to have one left. I started to say a while ago that I was really glad to be here, but after flying on American Eagle, I'm glad to be anywhere. heard somebody say one time, said flying on small airplanes had done one thing for him. It had certainly improved his prayer life. So, got your bill? Look at it. What do you see? Well, it's a piece of paper. Fine, high-quality paper, isn't it? You can't run that through a copier. There are lines in the new bill that won't copy. I've got a fine, beautiful steel engraving of Andrew Jackson. I see 20, four or five times on this side. On the back, there's a picture of the Capitol, of the White House, rather. But you know what this really is? Every one of you is holding in your hand a part of your life, because you traded part of your life for this money right here that you're holding in your hands, right? You swapped so many minutes or so many hours for so much money, right? Now, preachers don't work like that, you know. We don't have an hourly wage. Some preachers ought to be glad. But what you have done is, what you're holding in your hand is part of your life. It's what you traded your life for. Now, what are you going to do with it? Because the money that you give to the Lord is the part of your life you're giving to the Lord. And so he not only looks at the amount, and not only looks at the heart, but you see, the amount you're giving, whether it's $20 or $6, $50 or $100 a week, whatever it is, the amount you are giving is a symbol of your dedication. In giving this part to the Lord, you're saying, it's all yours. That's the principle of the Old Testament from the first fruits. You know, when the harvest came, boy, that first fruit, you know that first red tomato? That first year of sweet corn, how great, how good that tastes. You know, under the law, you didn't get to eat that. You had to take that down to the priest, to the temple. That belonged to the Lord. But you know, once you had given the first fruits, once you had given that first part, then everything belonged to you to use. But if you were greedy and kept back that first part, that best part, you had not sanctified everything else that you have. Somebody, a friend, good, someone I know very well, very liberal in their gifts to the Lord. And she asked me, she said, we've got a chance to buy a used Cadillac. Do you think I'm doing wrong to spend that much on a car? I said, you've dedicated what's yours to the Lord. Use it like you want to. That's the principle. When you're giving your money, you're giving your life. And it's a symbol of what you are and how much you love the Lord. Let me say just quickly, my time is going, it's already gone. So I'd ask you to give me just a little bit more. How do you preach on giving? Let me give you some things that I've gained over the years. First of all, do not so much preach on money as preach on giving yourself. I've learned that if you preach on money, you're usually going to have some resistance. If you preach on giving yourself, it's a lot more readily received. And Paul said that about the Macedonians, 2 Corinthians 8. That it's not the amount you give. He said that it's not so much what we give as it is the spirit in which we give. And he says he thanked the Lord for the Macedonians who had first given themselves to the Lord. And he said, if the giver is given themselves, then that's what's most acceptable. Once a person gives themselves, the amount of money is no problem. How do you determine then how much to give? Well, first of all, how much did you make? What is liberal in your heart? And also, what are the needs of the church? You know, there's a time in the church where some people gave everything they had because the needs were so great. Secondly, realize we're given to the Lord and not to man. You know, we don't give to a program. We give to the Lord. I heard about a missionary one time coming through, and the church allowed him to speak, and they took up a collection. And in the collection plate, they found a wedding band. And they found out it belonged to one of the widows. The missionary took it and went back to her, and he said, I'm sorry, I can't take this. She said, I didn't give it to you. Number three, preachers, be an example in giving. You know, the only way you can be bold in preaching on giving is to be liberal in giving yourself, because you're an example. If people don't know how much you give, the Lord does. And if we're not liberal and we preach on people being liberally, the Lord watches the collection. He knows we're... Well, I won't go any further. Realize giving is a vital subject. We live in a time in which that's our greatest danger. One verse keeps bothering me over and over again. As Jesus watched that young man walk away and sadly shaking his head, and Jesus said how hard it is for the rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. He was not talking just about that man that owned a good deal of property. He's talking about you and he's talking about me. If you've got an extra pair of shoes, if you've got an extra set of clothing, if you have food laid up for tomorrow, then you're living probably better than half the people of the world. And you qualify as being rich. And how hard it is for the rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And so when we teach people a real place of money, then we're helping them go to heaven. Rich, Jesus said it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for the rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Paul said, warn those who are rich. No, he didn't say that, did he? He said, warn those who want to be rich. Heard about a man one time, a friend of mine told me one time about flying over a ranch in Texas. It took him a long time to fly over it. And the man showed him all of the 16 sections of irrigated land that he owned. He talked about oil wells that were giving him thousands of dollars every day. And then finally he said, and do you know what I'm going to do when I get rich? Malachi talked about putting it in a bag full of holes, putting money in a bag with holes in it. I've got to stop. Time is up. God help us. God help us to live through the temptations that we face. Let this widow be our example. Thank you.